like formal introduction or anything like that. And we've done this before. So, but Heidi, we're now rolling. How are you?
I'm great. I'm better today than I was last time we recorded this.
Yeah, people need to know that this is our second time recording, and we just chose to do it again because last time we were just a little bit of a mess.
Yeah, and listen, you were great, Carl. We can be honest here and say it was me. I was a little bit of a mess. I'm a perfectionist. I want things to feel good, and I can tell when something feels good and when it doesn't, you know? And I'm like, I need a redo. Carl deserves a redo. So here we are. I have less on my mind today. I mean, so much on my mind, but less heaviness on my mind.
Well, I'm glad you feel better. And on my end, we also had those glitches. You couldn't hear me for a little bit. We got cut off several times. So I'm going to include myself in the responsibility. And I am glad that we can, do this again. But Heidi, let's just dive straight into it. Here is my first question, and it's a simple one, and you can answer it however you want, of course, because this is your podcast now, which is, where at this moment in time do you feel like you're doing your best work?
Where at this moment in time do I feel like I'm doing my best work? Now, I want to say this because I think it's important to know, even though we're re-recording, Carl, I have the worst memory on the planet. So I wouldn't remember if you asked me any of these questions before or not, or if they're fresh. And even if you did, you might get a completely different answer because this is the Heidi today. So where at this moment today do I feel like I'm doing my best work? I feel like I'm giving my most effort. I think we're going to go with that. I feel like I'm giving my most effort as a mother. Like that is where I am most compelled to be. And maybe we kind of go in two things. I'm going to say personal and then business. So I do feel like as a mother, I'm doing my best work that I've ever done. So in my history of being a mom, I today feel like I'm so far beyond where I was before. And part of that, it doesn't mean that I have it perfect because I'm so far from perfect. But I'm aware now of things that I was not aware of then. And awareness, as you know, we all know, is like the most important step, right? But awareness without action is nothing. So it does require action, and I am taking action. But I think I'm the most concentrated and effortful as a mom. But with that, I will say the reverse is, I was most selfful in a beautiful way a couple months ago. And I feel like coming back into the work realm combined with my relentlessness as a mom, like I refuse to give up any minutes with my kids when I come back into the workplace. Something has to give. And so I will say right now, today, this week, the last couple weeks, I feel like my self-care has kind of, I've chosen to deprioritize it so that I can be what I want to be as a mom. And then I would say business-wise, I don't even like to say business, right? Passion. I don't even want to call it a career. But whatever it is that we do, career-wise, I think I'm doing my best work actually in my podcast. Not promoting it, because I'm sucking at promoting it. Like, I don't know how to promote it. But what I do know is I get to, and Carl, you helped me. Some of your voice messages to me about my podcast were so huge and important and insightful. But how many people know the magic? Because it is magic. It's like a secret. There's a secret of showing up somewhere completely authentically as who you are, like the beauty that the freedom that comes from that. And I feel like the connection that you're able to create with your audience or our audience is it's something I've never experienced before in work. So to get to do that and to call it work call it work is really, really beautiful because it doesn't feel like, you know?
Right. Because you're just doing the thing that you would naturally do anyways. You're just doing it on a podcast, which I totally appreciate, because I think the expression that you have through your podcast is nothing like anything I had seen you do before. And I love that. And it's something that I wanted to explore today in our conversation, which is bridging the gap between the Heidi that maybe people have seen on TV or online versus the Heidi in real life, the Heidi who is a little bit more of a complete picture. And yeah. Just for fun, before jumping on the podcast today, I was like, I'm just going to Google you and see what shows up.
Oh, boy.
No, of course, it was extreme weight loss.
Yeah.
The TV show and your role there. And then that was pretty much the top searches. It was all around that. And I thought to myself, if somebody approaches you, Heidi, and says, hey, you're the person from Extreme Weight Loss, that TV show that you did alongside your former husband. Do you still identify with that, Heidi, or how does that sit with you?
That's so interesting you asked that, because I was just looking at my Instagram bio the other day, and I don't remember. It's pretty far up at the top, right? But it says co-host of ABC's Extreme Weight Loss. And I was thinking about it. I'm like, man, yeah, that's who I am, right? Because it's a building block or a Lego block in like the full Lego masterpiece that I am, right? It's a big part of it. It's like the foundation. It created a lot of what is today. But it feels like so long ago, right? I think I still, when I was a part of that with Chris, which was a completely accidental, unintentional thing for me to ever have camera time to begin with. Like that was a struggle for me because I wasn't used to it. And I never dreamed about anything like that. I had no idea who I was at the time. Like literally no idea who I was. I was just learning to have an opinion, but only a certain opinion because it had to be something that, you know, fit in the mold that I was in. And it was the first time in such a beautiful way that I realized I don't want to call it power because I think it's a God-given thing, right? Like I realized that I am a tool in God's hands. Like I realized that, hey, when I put my mind to something, I can actually do really great things. I can help these people who are hopeless, depressed, sad, self-loathing. And not through diet and exercise. Yeah, that was a part of it. But really through unconditional love, I can help them believe in who they are enough to where they believe in themselves. And I think that's what I got out of it. So yeah, I identify with extreme weight loss in that way more than any other. In understanding that love truly is the catalyst of all change. And it has been the catalyst forever in my life. I think what the world saw maybe on TV was flipping tires and nutritionists and different things like that. But what actually happened behind the camera that usually didn't make it was the long conversations into the night and the showing up and cutting their hair or shaving their back or whatever they needed done. It's the friendship. And that friendship and sense of belonging that I think Chris and I created hasn't definitely translated into everything I've done because it's who I am. I got to be me with them. And then that was pulled on the camera. So yeah, in that way, I identify with it, but it does, I mean, like I feel like Chris and I were married 20 years ago and it was really 4.5, you know, it just feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you say is the biggest misconception about you then?
Up until this podcast, I don't remember if we've talked about this yet or not. It's new to anyone listening. So even if we have... Oh, I just got a thumbs up. Did you do a thumbs up?
I did not. The thumbs up are showing up because you probably...
Whoa, did you see that?
Yeah.
Wait, did they just see that?
Yes, they did. They did. And it's going to continue to show up like that. If you do a peace sign, you'll probably get balloons or something. If you go like this, you'll probably get some balloons. That means that you have reactions turned on your phone.
I love that. Okay.
Heidi, you're cracking me up. It's amazing.
No, it's not doing it anymore. It's like, we're done with you. You've done it too many times.
It will happen when it has to happen. Amazing.
So the biggest misconception, I think, and here's the thing. I only know myself as I know myself. I don't really know what other people know about me or what they think about me, right? So what I say my biggest misconception is may not actually be, or their biggest misconception about me may not actually be it. What I would guess today, I don't, you know, I will say, this is what I'll say. Before, one of the reasons I wanted to start a podcast is because, I mean, let's say this in a way that doesn't sound egotistical, because it's not at all. But I have worked really hard and through a lot of crap in my life, and I have made a ton of mistakes, and I'm still making mistakes. I think we all are. I've made choices I'm not proud of. I've had situations I don't love that have happened to me. And I do feel like I've come out on the other side, at least for now, in a place that I love, as a person who I love. And I know that I only have that love for myself because of the hard that I've been through. And I know that for me, what's helped me get to where I am are people who've also been through tough times that I can lean on and have say, hey, you're not alone. I've been through this too. And it's like, oh my gosh, you made that stupid choice too, and you're there. Okay, then I'm going to be okay. I believe for me, a podcast is a place for me to take, you know, the attention span on Instagram, which is where most of my work has been done. Instagram, really, that's it. Facebook, you only get such a small picture of who someone is, and you're almost forced to keep the attention of the viewer. It's like, what's the headline? What's the and what's okay? Wait, they're not going to be interested in all of those words and all of that. They're not interested in the depth on Instagram. They're interested in like the width, right? The surfacey, like who can take up the most space in that shallow pool. Where I feel like a podcast, I'm not a shallow pool at all. Anyone who knows me personally knows I can like live there. I can write captions. I can hook people. But like that, and it changes people, but I feel like I'm an ocean. Mm-hmm. I am the ocean, and there is depth. And sometimes in the ocean, it takes you a while to swim out, right? To the deep part of the ocean. Same podcast. It might take me a little while, but when we get there and when we start diving, it's deep and it's beautiful, and there's scary parts and there's beautiful, like it's just, it's the ocean and it's a whole different world under there. And I think the podcast maybe, and but it's not about me, but I think the podcast, yeah, I think it allows people to see what's inside here. And I believe that those are the gifts that I have from God to help people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think maybe there was a little bit of a misconception potentially that I will say this. I think one of the misconceptions might be that I we won't even go into it. I do think there may be a misconception in almost everyone who has a spotlight right on them that fame is what they want and notoriety is what they want. And I don't, that's not me. I have a little bit of notoriety and I really appreciate it, and it's super uncomfortable, and I feel like it's a place I was put in, and it's like where much is given, much is expected. I've been given a lot and I didn't ask for it. Mm-hmm. And I also know it's a huge responsibility and a gift.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's a big one. You know, if I were to extrapolate some of what you said to my own personal life, I thought maybe 20 plus years ago that in order to be successful and wealthy, I had to be famous or known, or I had to be some kind of public figure.
Yeah.
And I realize now that if I could go back, I would tell myself, hey, being a public figure is the worst. You don't want to go down that path. There's ways of being successful and wealthy and having all those things that you want without being successful. But there is an option where you can choose to be a public figure. Yeah. Because maybe there's an aspect of that that you really like. And for me, it's the excitement, the connection, I'm just curious. And I know that when you get to connect with more people, you get a new experience. And even when you get to connect with more people than you will ever know personally, mm-hmm. yeah, you get an experience of life and maybe a perspective that the private citizen, it sounds so silly, yeah, but those who are private don't necessarily get. And there's no good or bad about it. It just is. But I guess if I were to now kind of send it back to you, one, I think my question was poorly articulated. I should have probably asked you, what is it about you that people don't know? And one of the things that people maybe not know is that you're so much more than what you present online. And I think it's as simple as that, which is cool. I'm curious also now, so your online persona, your previous TV persona, yeah, people may define you by your successes and that what you have done. I'm curious, what are the successful moments that you have personally experienced that may not be measured in money or attention, yeah, or that you feel like, oh yeah, this is what I look back at and I cherish and I value as something that makes me feel successful?
Yeah, okay, I want to get there, but I also want to go back to what you said because it was so good and I can relate. When you had said what you thought earlier on was that being a successful person is how you were, had financial success, you had success, like, or being a famous person, having a public mm-hmm. brand. And then now, like, there are times in your life where you're like, you know, if you could go back and say, hey, I wish I would have done X, Y, Z. I have had so many moments, Carl, because before I did anything with Chris behind the scenes of the show, which then brought me in set front and center, I was in real estate. And I did really well for myself in real estate. And I have had now I have like a decade and a half of public life under my belt. So I'm an expert at a public life now, right? Like, you are an expert at having a public life. And this is how I now know how to make income for my family. I know how to do it. And this is my skill set that I've developed. I've had more than a handful of times, especially over the past year and a half, 2 years since my anxiety, where I've been like, man, why did I get out of real estate? Like, why didn't I keep my foot in real estate? So I never needed this. And this could just be something that I love to do in real time. That's what I'm working on, is having revenue that has nothing to do with this. That way I can honestly show up to my people and give. Yeah, you can't give everything for free because people don't value free, right? If I want them to change their life, there has to be some energy exchange and monetary something so that they value what you give. But to know that, like, hey, nothing depends on my ability to make money from what I do, except for outside of the camera. And I get to show up here because I love doing it. Because I do love doing it. But when you also connect that I have to make a living like this, it can kind of muddy the waters and make it hard. And that makes that line where I guess you're kind of on a fence. You're balancing on a fence, right? Mm-hmm. So I am with you. And then what comes with it also is when you choose a public life, whether people agree with me or not, who also have a public life, you're giving permission to everyone watching you to have an opinion, right? Like, it's kind of like we teach, hey, no one deserves to have an opinion but those that you give, you know, the right to. As a public figure, anyone who's listening to this, there's a handful of haters out there, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. They get to say what they want, and I can be mad about it, but I also can be like, hey, this is just the life I signed up for, or I can try and fight it. But truly, it's giving people the right to have an opinion, where there are times where I'm like, okay, in this next phase of my life, I am going to be less or more careful about what I share and what I give people the right to have an opinion on. Like, next relationship, Carl, to be honest, I had said things in the last podcast that I'm like, I don't want that out there because mm-hmm. people don't deserve it, right? I get to keep sacred what I want to keep sacred this time and this next era. Mm-hmm. And I get to share what I want to share, right? But knowing that sharing sometimes can be like, I say casting, I guess the Bible says it, but casting pearls before swine, you know? So anyway, there's my big rant on that. I love this. And I think I love it more when I can separate making a living and my passion, right?
Yeah, that's a big one. And I actually want to dive into it. I would love to hear what successes, that was the second part of the question. We digressed a little bit. What successes that can't be measured necessarily in money or attention have you found to be the most valuable for you? Do you have a sense of what that is?
I mean, there are a lot. Like, I think truly some of the greatest, some of the greatest are the lives that were changed on our show. So we can rewind back there. It's all connected to people's lives that are changed. That is what they're all connected to. Like, I have one of my best friends, Bruce, was on season 4 of Extreme Weight Loss. And to see how far he's come, like, there is so much pride and joy that I have watching him in his life. His wife is my right-hand woman, Alexa, and he had met her after the show when he was helping us on season 5. And just to see all of that unfold and see Bruce become a dad and him, you know, he was previously, he was sexually molested by his dad from a very young age, to kind of work through that and to become a father and write a book. He was is dyslexic. All of these really amazing things happen in his life are beautiful. And then, you know, that was kind of the Chris era. And then in the last era of mine, we'll call it the Dave era. We can usually mark.
So Chris is Chris Powell and Dave is Dave Hollis.
And that was a whole different, beautiful, amazing era where I kind of spread my wings on my own without Chris for the first time. And I did, you know, these women's groups that were so magical. And I got to pour my flavor into it, not mine and Chris's, but who I am. And these women are actually, some of them are my really closest, dearest friends now. Many of them have made it through really difficult relationships and huge struggles with their kids. And yeah, they lost weight along the way and learned how to eat healthy and all the things, but that none of that really matters next to helping them love themselves and see themselves in a way that I see them or had seen them. And I think that is one of the things that I can do, is I can look at someone and see who they are in their highest self version/form before they can see it in themselves. And so I would say that's what I get the most excited about.
That's really cool. Well, it sounds like meaningful relationships is what you have found to be the most valuable in your career and personal life. And it seems like that also shows in the way that you represent your kids or anybody that you feature either on social media or even on your podcast now. So that resonates with me, and it seems to be very aligned, and I'm glad you're able to articulate it so powerfully. I'm curious, so if meaningful relationships are the substance of what you get out of your work besides financial gain, which allows you to get access to the things that you need to continue to live, in terms of work, what would you say you do? Are you a transformation specialist? Are you a fitness expert? Are you a nutritionist? What does Heidi do professionally?
It's really an interesting question. So you could say all of those things, right? Yeah. I think I have the certifications to back all of them in the history and but I think and this kind of goes into in the Heidi era. So we have the Chris era, the Dave era, the Heidi era. What I realize is that I love sharing special things, people, and experiences that I have had with other people. Like, Carl, I love seeing people have joy and to know that I had a part of it. And actually, if you look back historically and everything I've done, even in the Dave era, right? in my challenge groups, it wasn't just me. I would bring in people that were super impactful in my life and give them, lift them up and give them a platform, because I'm not the guru. I'm like the jack of all trades, but the master of none. I think what I am the master of is elevating and helping people, like, or bringing in what can help this person or what can help this person. I really do love that. So I think what am I? I'm a sharer. I share. Like, I taste a good food and I want everyone to eat it. I have a great experience with a shaman and I want everyone to use her. Because I just know that that can shift people's lives. And yeah, I educate myself in the fields that I share, like nutrition. Learning about nutrition for me, sorry, that's my doorbell. Learning about nutrition for me absolutely changed my life. The education is what helped pull me out of a over decade long eating disorder. Like, it wasn't just because I wanted to be skinny. Yeah, I did, right? But also it was hugely in part because I lacked the education or the knowledge to understand that not everything I eat goes directly to fat. I had this myth, this misconception as a young adult, and it terrified me, right? And so for me to kind of go through and educate myself through my own education, teaching people on the show, then bodybuilding, then diving in with nutrition certifications, to get to this place where now I'm like, oh my gosh, I have zero fear of food. And that I love. Like, I have this amazing nutrition education course that I used to teach and I want to teach again because I love sharing that with everybody because I know what it did for me and I know that it can help so many other people break the bonds that are holding them down around food. So I am a sharer.
Yeah, that is super powerful. And, you know, as you're speaking, I realize, wow, in many ways, I'm projecting what I think you are into this conversation already, which is what we all do. But I love that you were able to emphasize this idea of sharing. And I was trying to think, who is a sharer in terms of, like, what's the profession? And I was like, is that an influencer? Is that what it is? But then it hit me. Yes, you do a lot of influencing, but what it seems like you're doing is you're sharing the key information, the secret sauce to that which can unlock transformation, that which can unlock a sense of growth or fulfillment. And I think that's the thing that I've never been able to put my finger on when I've heard you speak. I'm like, what is it that Heidi is saying that is interesting right now? Because you may be sharing about some headphones or something, or you're sharing about a program, but there's something that you're saying that's making me feel connected to it. And I think what it is, and this is me just now having this epiphany, and I'm just sharing it to see if it resonates with you, that what you're sharing is, one, the information that is valuable that leads to the transformation, which is when you started studying nutrition, you learned something that could not be unseen. And once you realize that what you thought was true was not, now you were able to change your behavior. It completely became a paradigm shift.
Yeah.
That's what you seem to be doing with people at every level of your work and life. Is that true or am I completely off?
No, you are. You're right. It's and to kind of I guess connect it in its truth historically. I remember I was getting recertified when Chris and I were married because I was working on the show again. I had been certified in training years ago. But I was getting recertified. I had just done my CrossFit cert in 2009. And then I was doing another, I don't remember which one at this time. And in the textbook, I remembered it said, like, something to the tune of, at no point should you ever lower yourself to your client's level. You should always maintain you are above them and you are the authority. And I remember turning to Chris and I was like, I will never. Like, what is helping these people on the show, because we were working with the people, change is that they see me like I am here. I am on your level. I might have education in an area that they don't. They have education in areas I don't, right? But first, you have to be able to connect with someone at the level with which they feel themselves at. And then once that connection is made, right, through, yeah, and usually that sharing, then you can start teaching them. But like when, if I were to come in and proclaim I was the expert at everything or at something, no one's going to care to listen, right? They're going to look at me and be like, what does she know about what I'm going through? Like, she's never dealt with what I've dealt with. And so I think that that is why sharing is so powerful, because it allows people to see that no matter what we look like or what kind of a house we live in or what, we all have struggle, every single one of us. And I will show you my, mine's ugly, and I'm going to show it to you so you can see. And then I'm going to share with you what helped me, because while our circumstances are different, sometimes the medicine can be the same, right? That works for what we're going through.
Yeah.
And then I will say, a person that I'm not this person. I'm not comparing myself to this person. So I want to be very careful with what I'm saying. But someone actually pointed out to me about 4 or 5 years ago, they said, do you realize you do a similar thing as Oprah Winfrey? She's not the expert. She's just someone who shares and cares, and she elevates other people. She doesn't elevate herself. She's elevated, but she elevates other people who have messages through her platform to people who need it. And I loved that. Because I love Oprah. I love what she does. And I think it's a really cool thing.
Yeah, that's very cool. I believe that that's something that you do, certainly, which is elevate others. And you do it with ease, and you make it look very graceful. I think that's, just really, really powerful.
Thank you.
Curious. So how do you mechanically do this? Now let's just get into the I know you didn't like the term business, but you work, and it seems like you work a lot, and although it ebbs and flows, of course. I'm curious, how does the mechanics of your work or your business work? Like, what does that look like? Is it partnerships? Is it programs? Yeah. Is it how does Heidi, but we can just call it this. How do you make money?
Here's the thing. There are so many different types of people. And so if someone's listening and this doesn't resonate with them, I know so many people close to me work the opposite way that I do and are very successful. Maybe I'm a little less successful because I prefer, you just said the word. There are a lot of different ships, right? I am a partnership person. I love partnerships. I think one of the things that I have learned with partnerships, though, is if you're in business with the wrong people, and by wrong people, usually it's the money-centered people who maybe don't have the greatest ethics, and you don't enjoy working with, that for me is a no-no. And I've been through that. Chris and I together had been through some really ugly partnerships that have ended, legally, you know, and it's taken a lot of our time. And it's like, okay, I don't care what someone can promise. If it comes with that ever again, it's not worth it, right? And I think I've been through so many partnerships. Some of them have not been great, to where maybe my heart should be hardened and I should be like, oh, I'm going to do everything on my own, because I think that happens to people. But I do believe, and I have seen, that when you have the right people on your team, partnership can be a really, really, really beautiful thing. And it's hard, because in a partnership, just like a relationship, you're shown parts of yourself that maybe aren't mature sometimes, parts of you that you don't love. But I also think it gives the opportunity for growth. But what I love about partnerships is I get to do what I do best. And I think one of the things I do best is I'm kind of the ringleader. Sometimes it's the ringleader of the shit show, but I can bring people in who are better. I appreciate people who are better than me at what I'm not good at, right? I know I'm good at bringing people together. I know now I'm good at having a vision or creating a vision or feeling my way through things, and I'm great at learning. But having a marketing guy come in that's better than me, or a partner that brings to the table marketing and tech and whatever, and also we have great synergy, I think is really, really valuable. Like my app, I have a fitness app, I have a partner on that, and he's awesome. He and his wife are so awesome. I love them. I also have a coaching company that I do on my own, and I actually just recently decided to take what I do on my own drop it into the partnership because I know the power of a team. I know that I'm only one person. And if I can pull this thing in and actually have someone help me grow it, yeah, it's a smaller piece of a bigger pie, but the pie is growing and lives are changing. If it's up to me, it's not going to reach that many people because I have too many things going on. Yeah, the podcast I do on my own, but I have my supplement company, and I say my, I'm a partner. I have a handful of other partners in Transform, and I love working with them, right? I think with any relationship that I've been in, business-wise, it does take trust. And I think any one of us, right, any person, I think can go into any partnership and try and find things like, oh my gosh, wait, hold on, what's happening to this money? And I think you need to always be aware and you need to dot your I's and cross your T's, but also understand, for me, it's been huge to say, I'm not going to understand everything, right? And also I'm going to do my best to understand, and I'm going to choose to trust, which is why the people I go into business with are, it is vitally important that they are trustworthy. And I love it. I love the partnerships.
Yeah, I do too. And as somebody who has been a little jaded from especially business partnerships, for me, I'm curious for you, how do you weed out the toxic ones? How do you figure them out early on before you sign the dotted line?
Well, sometimes you don't. And truthfully, I haven't always, right? And also what's interesting is I think for me, Carl, like I've had to shift the way that I view all of it, right? And in the past, it's so like all encompassing and oh my gosh, do or die. And then lately, or the past handful of years, I've been able to step back and just be like, this is all one big freaking game, right? I'm going to do my best to strategize and try to steer clear of that person. Or now I'm in business with this person and it looks like they might be toxic. How do I play my hand the best to make sure that this doesn't burn me down? So it's all, I happen to love strategy. And it's all a humongous game of strategy and seeing how certain parts work with another. But I've also been in business with people who I believed at the time to be toxic. And after getting out of business with them, I later realized that that was not the toxic piece at all. It was something else. So I'm just super clear that nothing's super clear.
totally. So
it's not debt, you know, it's like just money and business, and we get to live or learn through it. Mm-hmm. Win or learn.
Yeah. Something that's very alive for me, and I know for a lot of people who listen to this, is navigating partnerships and relationships in a way that produces win-win outcomes. First and foremost, do you believe in win-win outcomes, or is there times where one wins more than another, and over time it balances out? And whatever you believe, I would like to know what that is, but also, you've had two marriages, you have four kids, you've been on TV, you've had businesses that you've shared now that have failed or have gone to a point where they just did not work out because of a poor partnership. I'm curious, how do you establish a foundation for producing the best outcomes for everybody? And is that even possible to do? Or is there always going to be somebody who has the upper hand or more leverage?
I honestly believe that's such a good question. And I think I think it's all perspective. So like, I know this because I've been in businesses with people. Most of my businesses have had 4, 5, 6, 7 people in it, right? And I might have the same hand as 2 or 3 other people. And by hand, we're sitting in the same position. Mm-hmm. And the drastic difference in their perspective, and none of the perspectives are wrong. One person sitting there thinking that they got the best deal ever. The other one sitting there thinking they got totally screwed, right? And then I'm kind of in the middle, right? Or whatever it is, there's just, it is perspective. Mm-hmm. And I do believe in win-win, but I think you can only actually achieve win-win if you understand that, yeah, you could have made more if it were win-lose, but it, what, like, you have to know what you're actually trying to win. For me, I don't need all the money in the world. I don't. I want enough money to allow myself peace in what I'm doing, my kids' experiences, and savings for college and whatever it is, right? And to not worry. Like, that's what I want. But I know a lot of people want tons of money in the bank. I don't need tons of money in the bank. I also, part of a win for me is knowing that relationships are salvaged, or relationships are whole that deserve to be whole. Like, mm-hmm. I would give financially of my shares if it meant that someone who I cared about, whose intentions I trusted and they trusted mine, would be happy or feel made right, right? Like, mm-hmm. and all that is, it's just a personal perspective. I have very different views than some of my past business partners. And I also think that's why I'm a little more, I believe this is why I've had a lot less stress. It's not mm-hmm. like I'm the most financially successful, but I do believe of compared to, you know, different partners that I've had or partners that I've seen, I view money a little bit differently. Mm. And it's one way to succeed, but it's not all of the ways to succeed, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big one. So yeah. To do a little callback now to where you are doing your best work and where you're showing up the best, and that being as a mother, I'm curious, now that you have a son who is about to venture out into the world, he's officially an adult.
Yeah.
what's Heidi's playbook that you give to your son? What does it say on the first line of that playbook?
I think what it says is, it doesn't matter what I say, you're not going to listen until you experience the world and you fall. So get out. And that's get just real. Like mm-hmm. I think the most important thing for me with my kids is them knowing that and even kind of drawing a picture of, like, it's going to be hard. You're going to fall and you're going to be okay. Like, I wish I knew that when I was 18, 19. I had no clue. Right. It's scary to let my kids to know that they're going to go out into the world and to know that they're going to fail. And it's so hard because I want to make every choice for them. And I want to tell them which boys or girls are good for them or not. And I also, someone told me recently, let me move this back out of the sun. Someone told me recently, they said one thing you should never, ever, ever, ever do with your adult kids is give them advice that they did not ask for.
That's a big one.
I know. I think I actually said it on my Parenthood podcast that was last week, because it just, like, they say they're going to come home with people that they're dating or these, you know, business partners or whatever it is, and you are going to, like, cringe, like, ooh, mm-hmm. absolutely not. And they said the last thing you should say is anything, right? Like, don't say anything. Wait until they ask your opinion, because if you just love them and show up as love for them and as support, eventually they will ask. And when they ask, they're actually going to listen. If you give without them asking, they're going to go against what it is that you said just to kind of prove. So that I'm kind of trying to prepare myself for that. It's very mm-hmm. hard because I'm a very controlling mother.
Yeah, I think you are correct, and I have failed tremendously at that. I'm like, here is all my unsolicited advice. You better be listening to everything I have to say, and it has bitten me in the ass hardcore. So I hear you. I'm with you on that. Somebody told me on this podcast. Her name is Sarah Baldwin. She said she's a polyvagal theory expert, a nervous system expert. She does somatic experiencing and somatic Ooh. Therapy. She's wonderful. She said to me, when it comes to attachment and relationship, especially parents and kids, as long as you are showing up, quote unquote, the right way or connected 30% of the time, you will have a high likelihood of your kids being resilient and successful Ooh. And have a healthy attachment with you.
Okay.
And I don't know exactly where the 30% comes from or what the stats are, but I was like, oh, that's great, because I feel like I've messed up quite a bit. And I'm glad that 30% is like my, you know, barrier of entry to success. The one thing that I have found to be successful, and see if this rings for you when it comes to parenting, is when your child, especially your older adult, can come back to you and be vulnerable and share and actually ask for the advice.
Yeah, that hasn't happened for me yet.
Maybe in 10 years.
That's what I'm like. Yeah, I actually, so my son is, I'm so excited for this because he needs it. Like, I'm like, he's actually going to go on a 2-year mission for his church that he goes to. And it's going to be so good for him, Carl. Like, because my kids, I've been able to provide a decent life for them. And they don't realize it yet. And I'm like, I got to stop saying, do you know how much, you know, whatever, how much I do for you? I am very excited for him to experience what real world is like, or and serve in whatever capacity that he serves out there. And then I think advice will be a thing that he wants. But there's still, he's 18, almost 19. But I think boys develop a lot slower than girls, right?
Sure. I'm 41 and I'm still developing.
Are we high five. When's your birthday?
April 13th.
We're like only a couple weeks apart.
Really? What day is your birthday?
March 28th. We're 16 days apart.
Wow. 1982?
Yeah.
Beautiful. Best year ever.
It is.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm younger than you. So I'm definitely I'm like 10 years behind you, I guess, then, because yeah. Same biological age, emotionally and mentally, 10 years behind. All right.
I don't mean all boys. I meant my son develops over my daughter.
Some boys.
Yeah.
Hilarious. That is pretty funny. But yes, that will be a big experience for him, I'm sure. And he will come back transformed. Okay, if the first line is go out and fail, what's the second line?
You know, I think something for this has been something that I have been preaching to my kids more often than not lately, because it's something I didn't know, right? And I think that's what we tend to teach, is what we didn't know or what we wish we would have known. And I was such a people pleaser, and I found myself in a lot of really not great situations in business and just in life in general, because I did not want to hurt feelings. And so I think for my daughters, yes, but all of my kids, especially my daughters, don't be scared to speak your truth. No matter who it offends, do not worry about offending people. Like, if I would have known that it's now be respectful, but also don't be afraid to offend people, because you don't choose who you offend. They choose how they are or aren't offended, right? And to have them be able to stand in their truth and not be emotionally manipulated, man, I hope my kids can bypass that in a way that I didn't.
Yeah, that's huge. That's a big one. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I think that's something that I'm still trying to learn, I guess, because I find myself constantly trying to bend and adapt to everybody's needs in ways that it ends up breaking me. I get completely exhausted. So I hear that lesson, and I'm still learning it. So I'll take the second line from your playbook and try to apply it.
Well, someone actually was telling me recently, and this is interesting, because I really care about people's emotions and feelings, really. And I sometimes, like you're saying, I will cater who I am or how I talk to certain people to try to help them feel powerful, right? And have them I almost chameleon to be what I think someone needs. And interestingly, what I've realized, someone pointed this out to me, they said, the more you try to chameleon and not bully, the more you come across as bullying. I'm like, what? and then they're with the people who I'm just straight, honest, truthful me. Sometimes things feel hard, but we have such a beautiful, flourishing relationship. And the people who I try and like tiptoe around it, that I'm somehow heard as the B word or the bully or the mean girl or whatever it is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And this is reminding me of something that I actually wanted to ask you, which is how do you create the space where you have an agreement for that kind of discourse to happen? And it stems from this idea of co-parenting that I hope we can explore just a little bit. But yeah. Is that something that in your household you agree on? You say, okay, everybody is free to say whatever they have to say right now so we can air things out? Or are there moments like that? Is it in the car, during dinner, before dinner, after dinner? Do you consciously create that? Do you deliberately do that?
So my house, I don't know if this is apparent or not. Through social, if this is a misconception, I'm a very strict parent.
Mm-hmm.
Very. And on the flip side, when I say something, it's such a pain in the ass, but I got to do it. Like I got to follow through and I have to discipline and I will not like let something go. And on the flip side, I will say one of the things that I've changed over the past couple of years, 3-4 years, specifically the past year and a half, has been giving space for people to talk, which is and air things out, which is very, very hard for me. Because when I see someone doing something wrong or what I perceive as wrong or against what I said, I immediately want to jump to action, right? But I will say, I do think because I'm a maybe more of a lively person, and while there is a lot of discipline, there is a lot of loud play. My home is very loud, very, and very playful. But the second someone crosses a line, it is like, we're done. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there is space. I think one of the things I realized in August, I did this retreat. No cell phone, no any device. I realized when I was there, like I kind of saw through other people's experiences. It was experiential therapy. And I saw through some of these grown adults' experiences, almost a foreshadowing of my children's pain when they were 40 or 50 connected to how I parented, right? Wow. And it was, Carl, I mean, everyone else there was crying over their own story. I was crying over everyone else's. And I had no tears for mine when I would go up and do my thing. But it was because I saw this man stand up and I'm like, that's Maddox in 50 years if I don't. And I just feeling his pain and hearing his pain and watching him in pain work through it was like, I got to change some things. Like I need to go home. And one of the main things was allowing my children to share their feelings. And I think I've talked to you about it, but those feelings cards that I do is a result of that. Like my kids' space to share their feelings. And I need to validate them. Even when I don't agree with them, I need to validate them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That rings loud and clear over here with me. My dad, although super loving, he was the strict one. And my mom was the one that encouraged us to share the feelings. So there was always this balance. Mm-hmm. And what I've found, the hardest thing to do as an adult these days is to be able to share my feelings with other people in a way where they don't have to fix me. Like, you don't have to, just because I'm feeling a certain way doesn't mean that I need your help. I just need to share them because they're so intense right now that if you can just hold space for a minute just so I can say this thing, it's not going to change the way I'm going to behave. It's just going to allow me to be a better person and show up better. That's been the hardest thing. So I love that you're doing that. And especially for men, I find that it's like pulling teeth. I'm like, can you just fucking say it?
Well, yeah, what's interesting is I'm the one when someone starts to share. Like in relationships, it's really hard for me because if a man shares.
Okay, we're good. Yeah. Did you have a call come through or something?
Are we good?
Yeah, we're good.
Yes, I thought, forgot to do not disturb on this. Can we? What I was saying is in relationships, it's really difficult. A man will try to share with me and then I try to fix.
You're like, man up.
And yeah, and they're like, stop. I don't need you to fix me. So that is a hard thing. I hear you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's cool. And how has that been going for you?
What?
What part? The part where your older son gets to share his feelings.
It's been going great. It is. Now, Maddox, though, he'll say when I ask, he'll be like, I don't know how to, he's not sure yet how to express himself. Because I think for some men, it is hard because you are almost raised to be tough and to keep it all in. And so it is newer for him. Cash, on the other hand, is like, I mean, he can dive into all the ways that he feels and he can connect to his early childhood on why he feels the way that he does. And so it's like every kid is a little bit different based on what they've had to go through, you know? But it's been a really cool thing to do those cards. Really, really, mm-hmm. really cool.
Yeah, you may not have a relationship with them, but what are the cards called so people who are listening maybe can use them? I think they're pretty cool.
Hold on, can I take you on a ride with me?
Yeah, yeah, take me on a ride. This gets to be kind of like our soft landing as we're getting to our time.
Yeah, here we go, guys. Field trip around my house.
Yeah.
Let's bring these cards into Cash and Ruby's room. This is where we do it, right here at this table. So,
okay.
Let's see. See, like yesterday, we did this. We did board panda. We did board panda yesterday, and then the back mm-hmm. has all these prompts. So the cards, right here, little otter emotions.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and then right after we do these bedtime, they're mindful meditations.
Mm.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Mindful meditations for bedtime. My kids love it.
That is so cool. And how long have you been doing this? A month or something like that?
So let's see. I should look and see how many cards are in that deck. We didn't start the emotions one until about a month ago. bear with me. But the bedtime meditations, we're in November. I think we started in middle of September is when we started. So we're a couple months in. And about mm-hmm. a month into the feelings cards.
Okay. And you do this mostly with your youngest kids, right? Your two youngest ones.
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. And have you noticed, besides the habit and the routine, have you noticed a difference in how they're communicating? Is there anything that has come up that you're like, oh, wow, that was surprising, or that's interesting?
Yeah. You know, the thing I noticed the most, because the bottom of the card actually gives a cue to the parents. So, like, it cues you on how to ask, but at the bottom, it would say something like, for frustration or embarrassment, right? Say embarrassment. It actually will have a cue that says, when your child is embarrassed, almost like a don't tell them not to be embarrassed. Allow them to feel embarrassed and give them space. Or like if your child can't talk about their anger, encourage them to draw a picture of it. So it's really cool. I have never been able to have these kinds of conversations with my two little kids. They're great talkers, but to actually sit and give space and not have anything they say be wrong. And I know like part one of the questions as well is like, what do you do when you feel sad? Because sad is an emotion. And to hear one of my kids will be like, well, I go to video games or I eat or I sleep. And that those three things are repeated on a few of the harder emotions. So then as a parent, I'm like, oh man, there are their painkillers, right? Don't make them wrong. Don't tell them they're like they shouldn't do that, but hear it and be aware. And so it opens up the ability for us to have conversations about different kinds of painkillers. It's really cool.
That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. And has it in any way changed the way that you are communicating about feelings?
For sure. For sure. Because I am someone, if my kids are throwing a fit, I'm like, nope, 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 we're not. And so for me, like, it's actually given me more of a softer touch. I have a lot of masculine energy naturally. And for me to, and kind of one of my journeys over the past 4 or 5 years is like, okay, embrace the feminine a little bit more, allow myself to be softer and to not move all the time and to kind of be nurturing. And so, yeah, it's been huge for me in my ability to kind of be soft, be the landing that they need.
That's wonderful. Yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah, there's a lot more I would love to unpack, but we are running out of time. So maybe we'll have to do part two in the future, because one of the things that I believe people see in you is this strength and ability to navigate this world with what seems like a lot of clarity. And then it's contrasted with the reality of the internal struggles, anxiety, previous eating disorder, and grief, all these things that you've experienced that are messy. And like you said, these are like the ugly truths about me. But somehow you keep going. You're like you're a knife that just kind of cuts through butter. And I am a person that's over here wondering, like, how does she do it? Like, what's the secret sauce type thing?
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's cool to hear you talk about all these things. Heidi, before we send you off, is there one thing that you would love for people to know about the work that you're doing? You can plug the podcast. I'll, of course, link it. Do you have a message or any final thoughts?
You know, all I'm going to say, I just appreciate everyone listening. So my final thought is thank you. If you made it all the way to the end.
Yes.
I really do have so much gratitude for my life and the people in it. And for you, Carl, and for everyone listening, I appreciate it. And I hope that you got something special out of it. I always try and remind people that I work with, don't try and remember everything from every lesson I teach. Just remember, like, what is one gold nugget? If you're listening to this right now, maybe just think of what was one thing that stuck out to you today. Take that one thing and implement in your life and watch how it changes things, right? And then you can always go back and listen again. If there's anything I'm going to plug, it's just my podcast. And I have no sponsors on it, so I'm not making money. Just come hang out with me.
Heidi's Lane. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yes.
There you go. That's amazing. Heidi, thank you so much. I'm going to stop the recording. Don't hang up on me.
Okay.
All right. See you next time.
Okay.
This is the Freestyle Way.